Welcome to The Front Porch, where we tackle tough issues and try to find common ground. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director at West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
I'm Laurie Lynn, Opinion Writer at the Charleston Daily Mail.
I'm Rick Wilson with the American Friends Service Committee, sometime writer for the Charleston Gazette.
And this week we have a couple of things on our minds. Of course, with the riots going on in Baltimore, racial disparities and class disparities are very high on our list of things we're thinking about. And then a story came out in the Washington Post this week and a map. That map colored Appalachia in red. And red meant, according to this story, the most racist area in the United States. So this was based on a study of who searches for the N-word, and they use that as a proxy for racism.
Well, I think it's a really interesting way to try to measure racism, first of all, the Google search. I'm not sure it's the definitive way, but it certainly is a neat way to use the way that Americans use the internet. I guess the theory is that in the privacy of your own home, your Google searches reveal something about yourself.
Rick, do you buy that this is a proxy for racism, people searching for the N-word?
I think it's a really interesting way to go about looking at the problem. I think they also try to control for it by ruling out alternative spellings of it that might reflect different demographic approaches or different interests.
For example, there was a finding that African-American people, when they use the same term online, they'll end it with an A or an AH instead of ER. And so they threw those out as a way of kind of getting rid of folks that are searching for terms that deal with their own race instead of terms like N-word jokes or Obama and the N-word, which are the sorts of searches that white people tend to do when they search that word. The study says that not only is there this signal that there's higher racism in areas that do searches for the N-word, but that African-American people living in those same areas have a higher rate of mortality than you would expect otherwise. In other words, they're trying to say that use of this N-word in searches equals more racism, equals more stress for black people, equals they die sooner.
Well, there's huge research done all over the world on what's called the social determinants of health, which is established, you know, pretty much rock solid that it's your relative position within a society that determines your morbidity and your mortality, how long you live. When you're in a situation where you can't participate, where you have little control, where your neighborhood's not safe, where you're liable to be arrested or picked up or all these other things, it activates the body's fight or flight system, which is meant to originally designed to, for short-term things. But if you're on all the time, if there's these things you worry about, it actually affects your susceptibility to infectious diseases, to chronic diseases.
And another thing I would say is the isolation. West Virginia is 94% white. There aren't a lot of black people here. So how does that factor in? You know, you have less of a community, if we're talking about communities or people who look like you. You're just more isolated. And I think that could lead to, you know, more stress. And that it looks like that's what that study found.
Rick, how does it make you feel when you see that? I mean, you've worked on these issues a lot.
I think there are large areas of Appalachia where we have people are extremely limited in their experiences of other people. I thought it's interesting where, negative stereotypes tend to go down as education levels go up. That was one thing they found in the study, which I thought was really interesting. I had a sociology teacher way back in the day who said that Appalachians are often prejudiced in the abstract, but not in the concrete.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some issues.
Yeah, so Appalachia is the reddest part, red being the most racist as measured by the Google search. If you look at Alabama, Georgia, those places don't look as racist on the map. But one thing I think you have to take into account is West Virginia has a white population, 94% white. And those states have a lot more African Americans. So I think maybe if you just were able to isolate the white folks in Alabama and in Georgia, I think you might see a racial attitude more similar to Appalachia. So I'm not so sure that is it that we're so different in our attitudes here, or is it just that we're a lot whiter here?
You know,
having said that, though, out west, you do have some states, Wyoming, for example, Utah, where the white population is very high, like West Virginia. And people out there are not searching for the N-word. So I think that, you know, that's an interesting question. Are they as racist but not expressing it in the same way that people are here? Or are the attitudes actually different?
Well, they might be more focused on immigration issues there.
Oh, so yeah. For example, maybe their thinking is focused on the Mexican people that are coming across the border more than African Americans.
Right. Or maybe the Mormons in Utah just would never dream of using the N-word.
They're just more polite about it.
Sure, possibly.
Yeah, I could totally see that. Will Carter, who is a fan, a former high-ranking official in the Gaston-Caperton administration in West Virginia. Anyway, he was pointing out the fact that there's some data from the 2008 and 2012 elections around the President Obama's election that shows that West Virginians didn't act much differently than white people throughout the rest of the South, and in some ways showed even less racist attitudes. So the assumption was, of course, since we didn't vote for Obama, that it was a racial thing. People here, I think, took very great umbrage with that. We did vote for a felon who was still in jail at the time, if I remember right,
yes,
in the primary, Democratic primary, over Obama in many West Virginia counties. But is that because he's black?
I think there's been a tendency over the last few decades in politics to use sort of coded racial appeals. And I think it goes far back, as Kevin Phillips wrote, I think in the late 1970s, about a Southern strategy that a path to a Republican majority. He wrote a book called The Emerging Republican Majority. He believed that, you know, white voters resentful of the civil rights movement could open the door to a Republican majority in what had previously been a solidly Democratic South. And if you stop and think, I think overt racial appeals do not work. They offend people, but I think subtle appeals where you don't go over the edge kind of work. When Reagan ran for office, he talked about welfare queens. And when most people heard the word welfare queens, they probably did not picture, you know, a white woman age 30, you know, who's trying to go to college and has two kids. He talked about being in a grocery store where a strapping young buck buys steak with food stamps. And what image does that conjure up? I mean, and, you know, so it's...
But that's such a hard thing to defend yourself against, because what's the proof?
Yeah, I think one thing that will be very interesting is to look at it, assuming that Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee in 2016, to look at what her share of the vote is here. I wouldn't expect her to win the state, but, and I suspect that she probably will do better than Obama has done. Now, whether that's because she's white or whether that's because she's very closely associated with her husband, who was popular here, who is more of a Southern type Democrat. If you look at Obama, he's a fairly liberal former law professor from the University of Chicago. Grew up overseas. It's much easier to paint him as the other, regardless of the color of his skin. Now, do I think that the color of his skin had nothing to do with it? Certainly not. But you've seen the Democrats' electoral fortunes on a very downward trajectory here for 20 years, and I don't think you can necessarily say simply because Obama did worse than any other Democrat has that that's attributable to race. And I don't think many people would argue.
I do think, like, if you look at the last election, the fact that you had a black man with a funny name to blame all the evils of the world on was a gift from the gods in this election cycle. And I remember even a few years ago, there used to be, I saw a sign, I took a picture of it but lost it. It was a political sign, one of the times when Manchin was running for Senate, and it was a black and white sign. I think it was black background, white letters that said Manchin equal Obama. So how subtle?
Well, who
can
was
that
it
be?
A gift to, Rick? Obama won the election.
He didn't win it here, but
no,
if you look at the
legislative
race and other things,
right.
I think a lot of people were able to run on the war on coal, and the fact that there was
right.
a black man that you could blame it all on really made it easy. And I think right. there is a pattern for that in history, and I'm not, you know,
yeah, it's just, you might be right. But it's just, how is there any way for us to know?
Well, I think, as I said, I think one really interesting thing will be to look at what happens when, you know, presumably, if not Hillary Clinton, will at least be a white nominee for the Democratic Party.
Well, one last thing, and I'll let it go. But Anna Sale, our former reporter now with WNYC, she went down to Mann during the primary between Obama and Hillary Clinton and got some really interesting statements. And one of them was from a preacher who said he was conflicted because he didn't want to vote for Obama because he was, quote, half a terrorist. So think of, and which half of Obama was the terrorist half, by the way. Think about that for a second.
There's no way under the heavens that I'd vote for Obama.
Why is that?
Well, because of his belief.
What do you mean his belief?
Well, I'm a born-again Christian. And he's of the Muslim faith or whatever. You know, he don't. From what I understand, he don't believe in God, and we don't need nobody ruling our country that don't believe in God.
He's actually Christian.
Well, he says he is, but
you don't believe him.
I don't know. There've been some things come up, you know.
And he didn't really want to vote for Hillary because God said that man had dominion over the woman.
Right.
But because Bill Clinton was going to be in the White House, it would be okay.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So those attitudes, what's amazing about the 2008 election, you can find examples online. There are people in West Virginia that said out and out pretty outrageous
things.
But
you can find people to say outrageous and reprehensible things in pretty much any county in any state in the country.
That's true. And if they do it in Iowa, it's a crazy person who does something out of sync with the rest of the state. If they do it in West Virginia, it's proof.
Right.
Of our racism.
Right.
I think John Stewart suggested we change the state motto to no interviews. You know? I have my own campaign for what we should change the state motto to. We should change the motto to you can't make this shit up, and I'm waiting for a Latin translation. I want street Latin, you know, to do it.
I think the state of Florida already has that one copyrighted.
Right.
West Virginia has a really interesting, complex, rich racial history. And also current. You know, I live on the west side of Charleston. There are many, many mixed race couples. There are many mixed race children. There was a DNA study that came out recently that showed that African Americans in West Virginia have some of the highest percentages of European ancestry of African Americans in any state. In other words, in some ways, despite the racism, we're also very close to each other as a community.
You know, I think I'm an admirer of William Faulkner's books, and one of the things that Faulkner shows is that you often tend to think of black and white people as separated and estranged, but we've been all up in each other's business mm-hmm. for several hundred years. So there's and again, West Virginia really does have some amazing history. Again, part of the legacy of mining is black and white workers standing together and fighting for justice and safety on the job. In terms of black history, I mean, you're talking about a place where Carter Woodson got his education, became principal at Douglas High School. In Huntington, you know, he's the father of black history, where Booker T. Washington walked 250 miles almost to come here and began to get his education, where the meeting that helped launch the NAACP was held at Harper's Ferry. I mean, there's just many, multiple things here.
Where Bill Withers grew up and went on to write the song Lean on Me based on his experience living in the coal field.
Leon Sullivan.
So, man, for having a relatively small African-American population, some incredible leaders have come out of here. Lori, what does this do to the state's reputation and then also to the state's ability to be able to grow, to thrive, to attract new people here? You guys are relative newcomers to the state. What does this reputation do to that?
Yeah, it definitely doesn't help. You know, diversity is a draw for many people, and it's just another negative stereotype about West Virginia, about Appalachia in general. And that's why, you know, you hate to see the headlines, West Virginia, most racist state in the country. So, it's unfortunate. I think it's something that you know, people need to be cognizant of and keep working on.
Here's a take on it that, you know, might seem strange, but I can make the case that obviously African Americans suffer most directly from racism, but I would argue that racism probably hurts mm-hmm. more white people than it does African American people, especially when dog whistle politics, when racial appeals are used to promote policies that increase inequality, that destroy the middle class, that undermine it. I think racism in a way gets in our way. I'm talking about the whole country of any step toward a better society, toward a more open thing. So I think we need to deal with it. I'm not calling out individuals because I think it's bigger than the individuals, although we're all part of it, and it affects different people in different ways.
So when I was in Florida, when I lived there for 4 years, you didn't have to try to find diversity. It was just all around you. My daughter went to a school where people of all races, on one side of us, we had a Puerto Rican couple. On the other side was a family from Ecuador. West Virginia is becoming like this strange white island of non-diversity in a world that's very diverse. Are our kids going to be able to understand and operate in that larger world?
I've talked to people recently about, for example, the immigration debate in the country. People here don't even have any concept. They're not really even very interested in, because we don't really have a large immigrant population here. So we, you know, neither have the benefits nor the problems of it. It keeps us from kind of participating in the American conversation about some of these things because we just don't really have the experience of it.
I got to give some props to Rick's group because I think that there are a small number of groups in the state that have worked on these issues for a long time, and the American Friends Service Committee keeps trying at it. there was a really horrible case a few years ago of a developmentally delayed African-American woman who was kidnapped and raped repeatedly in a rural part of Logan County by a white family. And it made national news. It exploded, as you might imagine. Mm-hmm. Rick, could you tell the story about what happened next, what you guys did to kind of bring the black community in Logan County together with some of the people in, that were in the area that where this all took place?
Well, I think it was the people of Logan County coming together. And again, Logan actually has a pretty interesting and diverse racial and ethnic history. Again, part of the legacy of mining. But there was a strong feeling that this action did not represent the people of Logan. And one really moving thing was that a pastor about 1 mile away from where the crime happened in a very white area of Logan County offered his church to have an interracial service, you know, for healing and supporting justice for the victim of the crime. And once again, stating this doesn't represent it. And so people from the black and white community came together. Some folks were actually scared to go there. So, and it was beautiful because everybody kind of stepped out of their comfort zone, and we sent a strong message: this is not us, this is not West Virginia. And it went viral statewide. You were there, right?
I was there, and I was proud to cover it at the time as a reporter.
The other thing that happened is that after that, some folks in Logan County, mostly white people, but a diverse group, came together and actually built a house for an elderly black, for two elderly black women who were living in a place that was inaccessible. So they built them a nice new house. They called it the House of Love Build. And again, it's just a way of showing that when there are incidents like that, you can bring something positive out of it. And we've done that. And people have done that here a lot. I give credit to the local folks for that one.
You know, maybe in the abstract there are these racist attitudes, but in personal relationships, mm-hmm. when people know people, there can be tremendous love and generosity.
Right. So the abstract attitude can affect whether you'll vote in the voting booth for a black person, right? But as far as how you treat your neighbor who lives two doors down who's black, that might be a different thing.
And I think one of the other concerns that I have is that this diversity that has been in the coalfields now for almost a century is starting to disappear because a lot of the African-American populations there are shrinking as the population shrinks throughout the coalfield. The other thing that we wanted to talk about a little bit was the riots going on in Baltimore. And Laura, you've been thinking about that. How does that relate, you think, to Appalachia and to West Virginia?
One thing that we've covered at the Daily Mail is the efforts that local leaders have put in on the ground here in Charleston, specifically is what we've reported on, to make sure that this is never going to happen here, to lay the groundwork. And there's some really neat things that pastors here have done, sort of town hall meetings where police speak to residents and just to try to get a framework and a groundwork of understanding and lay those lines of communication. So in the unlikely event, we hope, that that anything like that would ever flare up here, we have those relationships that can kind of tamp down the violence and the bad impulses that you really saw in Baltimore and in Ferguson earlier.
Well, I think it's important to prevent the kind of things that led up to that incident to start with. And I will give the Charleston community a lot of credit. I think they're probably leaders in the state. And again, I want to stress that I think this racial issue is a structural thing. It's not a conspiracy. It's a legacy of time and centuries. It affects that. There are studies that show that communities that are more diverse have less generous social policies and communities that are more homogenous are more generous. If you look at why it took so long to expand health care in the country, it was blocked in the 40s and 50s by Southern senators who didn't want to desegregate their hospitals and health care systems. You know, so again, this issue of race is a complex thing that hurts white people as well as black people. So if we move beyond race, we can embrace our mutual humanity.
This is following on your DNA point, Scott. One interesting thing you read out there, and I don't know if I subscribe to this, I don't know enough about it, but some people think that there are differences actually in the cultural DNA of the people who settled Appalachia and the South versus the people who settled the upper Northwest in the country. So here we have the more Scots-Irish background. There we have the Scandinavian background. It's really interesting to think, is there something culturally there that's even persisted, you know, this many generations down that affects how we see, you know, people who look different from us?
There are some interesting, so there's a really good book called Albion Seed, which looks at different British subcultures in America. Mm-hmm. Like, I married someone from New England. New England is a totally different world, you know, and compared to, like, the middle colonies, what used to be in the South, and we are sort of the back country. Mm-hmm. And them's my people. My great great grandfather was a minor Confederate hero. Let me just lay that out there.
All right. Well, hey, I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. This is The Front Porch. Thank you, Rick Wilson with the American Friends Service Committee and Charleston Gazette. And thank you, Lori Lynn from the Charleston Daily Mail, for another really heavy discussion on a very, very controversial topic. Next week, kittens in Appalachia. You know, we'll do cat stories.
How about raw milk?
Oh, yeah, I'm up for raw milk, sure.
Like, up for it, like you want some?
No, I'm lactose intolerant, so I can only discuss it in the abstract.
I think we should do exotic animals, too. You want to talk about controversy. We are now available as a podcast on iTunes. So if you search for us under The Front Porch, we will show up with about 20 different other podcasts called The Front Porch. Many of them are Christian and wonderful. Some of them are Southern comedy. But we are the one that's made by West Virginia Public Broadcasting with the two rockers in it. You can't miss it. So check us out on iTunes. Subscribe. We're also available on Stitcher. And you can always go to wvpublic.org. Thanks for joining us.